everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's time for another Secret Wars Saturday, and this time we're going to be covering Marvel Superhero Secret Wars number 10. So real quick, for those not familiar with the Secret Wars Saturdays or the Marvel Chronology Project, which is kind of a larger project in scope than the Secret Wars itself. Basically, I just wanted to get caught up on Marvel. You know, I'd gotten away from Marvel after the first Civil War event, and I decided that in order to do that, I wanted to read the most recent Secret Wars event. But when I went to look at reading orders, you know, I'm a comics fan, so I'm a completist to some extent. And they said, everybody told me, Hickman's run on Avengers and Fantastic Four, like, lead into that. And so I was like, okay, I got to keep going back further and further and further just to read all the Hickman stuff that leads up to Secret Wars and read all the Secret Wars stuff, and I'll be caught up. And so I went looking for like a complete reading order of all of Hickman's work at Marvel, because apparently from the time he started at Marvel, that's what he was doing. He was working toward this overall Secret Wars story. So what I found on a website called the Comic Book Herald was a complete Secret War chronology, a complete reading order for all the Secret War stuff, all the way back from the mid-80s with the original Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, followed by Secret Wars 2 with all those crossovers, and then Secret Wars 3, which was actually a story arc within Fantastic Four, and then there was another Secret War 3 and Secret War without the S. And so I was like, you know what? This covers like 20 plus years history of Marvel. And although I've read a lot of it, it'll be a nice trip down memory lane. And eventually I'll read all the way up through it for the chronology and we'll get caught up. But we'll do other Marvel chronologies at some point, you know, maybe a big chunk of Iron Man or Fantastic Four or Captain America, what have you. But first we got to finish this. And it's probably, I don't know, 500, 600, 700 issues. I mean, I haven't counted, but it's substantial. So doing one a week, I don't know that we'll ever get there in my lifetime. But when we do the tie-ins and the crossovers, we often cover more than just one book a week. So I think for this important event, you know, Marvel Superhero Secret Wars was the first real big event, if you will. I don't want to call it a crossover event because it really didn't tie into too much other stuff. I mean, there were some preludes. Some of them, it was just a panel or two. But with Secret Wars 2, that's when Marvel's like, oh, if something's popular, we can tie it into the other books and put a little trade dress on there that says Secret Wars and boost sales. And then it eventually got to the point where now it's not one event a year. It's one event leading into the next event, leading into the next event, sometimes two events going on at once. So yeah, a bit of a mess. And it all started with Marvel's Superhero Secret Wars. But, you know, at the time when this came out, it was something new and it was something fun. And I bought them off the stands as they were coming out. So wanted to focus on this series just because it is such a landmark and it is such a milestone in comics. But as I said, going forward, just because we want to get through them, we may do two or three issues per episode. Like, I mean, for the preludes, we did that. Sometimes we did three, sometimes we did two, just because, again, they didn't tie in a lot. So, but if you want to follow along with the chronology, there are varying levels. We picked the most in-depth with absolutely everything that crosses over even a little bit. There are other, you know, you can just read the 12 issues of Secret Wars and know what's going on. Or you can, there's one that takes some of the main crossover books. Or you can go whole hog like we are and read absolutely everything that ties in. So there's links in the show notes to the comicbookherald.com website where you can find all those different chronologies. And I really encourage you to check it out. If you've never read Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, it is a piece of comics history. And it's, you know, if you want to have an understanding of the Marvel Universe, there's a lot worse places you could start. So Nick is joining me. A fellow LFM contributor is joining me for this podcast. He is a Marvel guy. That being said, because he came into comics reading at a much later date than myself, he had never read this. So without going into any specifics on issue 10, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
If you can kind of put issue 10 out of your mind and just talk about 1 through 9, since you weren't able to join us for those issues because you were catching up, basically. What are your thoughts? Like if you just take issue 1, let's just talk about issue 1 for a second. What was your initial impression? You know, you read the prologues, and you and I talked about that offline a little bit, about how some of them were a little tougher to get through, a lot of dialogue, kind of a little bit of their time, which is the same thing that Manny found. You know, he hadn't read these either. And him not being a Marvel guy had even less knowledge than you. So, let me ask you, when you read issue 1, I mean, obviously you had heard of Secret Wars before being a Marvel fan, but what was your impression of issue 1 when you read it?
Well, I was completely wrong on what I thought Secret Wars was, because I did not realize Secret Wars and Secret Invasion were two separate events. So coming into this, I thought I was getting into a Skrull story, honestly, because I'm that basic on my – I hear Secret, and I'm like, there's one Secret Marvel storyline.
Secret Invasion was right before you started reading Marvel, right? Or pretty
– Yeah, it would have been so – I started reading comics around 2011, right before the Avengers came out. That was when I moved home from California, and my friend was like, let's go to a comic book store. So we did, and –
Yeah, and I think
now we get our weekly stock.
Do you know when was Secret Invasion? Let me look that up. 2000.
I think that was a little earlier than that.
I mean, I know it was after. It was after Civil War for sure.
And I've read Civil War as a trade paperback.
2008 to 2009 was Secret Invasion.
So that was even before I was reading.
Yeah, comparatively, that's not that much before you started reading. As compared to Secret Wars, which is almost 30 years before you started reading, right?
Yeah.
So it was a complete surprise, and you knew absolutely nothing, no Skrulls, clearly. So what did you think when you read it?
Well, one of the first things that strikes me about it, just comparing it to, like, I have read recent Marvel events like Avengers versus X-Men, or I actually really like Secret Empire and all that. The recent Secret Empire, I've actually read the old one too. But it strikes me is that just everyone doesn't know each other instantly. It's very interesting with Secret Wars. Today, if you read a comic, it's not like Captain America's having to get the lowdown on the X-Men before they join forces. It's like, oh, of course, even Watt knows exactly who Wolverine is. Like, everyone knows each other these days. So reading an older volume is interesting, the mistrust the mutants have for the Avengers, and just the fact that they have to be introduced to each other and they think they're loose cannons and stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess a big part of that was throwing Magneto onto the Good Guys team.
Yeah, and Manny and I commented on that when he read the first issue as well, because his whole thing was, okay, so they don't know each other, but you know, Wolverine didn't have his own title at this time. They weren't putting out 5-6 different X-Men. There was one X-Men book, there was one Avengers book, there was one Fantastic Four book, one Iron Man book. They didn't have quite the exposure that they have now. So, and I commented on this because I had forgotten. It had been a long time, 10 plus years since I'd read Secret Wars. So if you go back and look at stories that were told in the Wolverine title, which I want to say it debuted in 1988, so 3 years after this, there are stories of like around the era of World War II when Wolverine was still alive, going by the name of Patch back then, where he and Captain America teamed up. They already knew each other, but – those stories hadn't been written when Shooter did Secret Wars. So in a way, the later stories that technically take place before in Marvel time, before Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, make this kind of not make sense, if you know what I mean. It's like, wait, they do know each other. So
retconning.
Yeah, exactly. Retconning, exactly. So we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to issue 10. So issue 1, surprised about what it was, surprised that everybody didn't know each other. And then how did you feel about the series going forward? Did you enjoy it or?
Well, it's a very, obviously not exactly the most complicated comic book storyline, but one of the more fascinating ones where, you take your best of Rogues Gallery, more or less, and your best of superheroes and just be like, here's a playground. Like, go fight. And it's very interesting to see it's almost more fascinating to see the way the villains interact with each other than to see the way the heroes interact. Though the whole X-Men break off was kind of unexpected, a lot more of extreme than it would be today, even in like Secret Empire. The X-Men did their own thing, but it was a little less pronounced of them not trusting each other. But I don't know, it just feels like the ultimate way to like kind of lay out your characters. It reminds me of the Star Trek episode where it's just like the good guys versus the bad guys, and the guys are like Kirk and Lincoln and Spock and the greatest Vulcan that ever lived versus like the Klingons and all that. It's a very clean battlefield that's way more complicated than I would have expected, and it's been very enjoyable so far.
Yeah, well, I think the origins of it are, you know, Mattel finally reached a deal with mm-hmm. Marvel to start producing toys again for Marvel, and they wanted a comic to showcase the toys that were going to be sold. So that's, you know, this is the idea that Shooter came up with. So yeah, I mean, you don't want it too complicated. You don't want to have a high barrier of entry because the way they're looking at it is there's going to be new readers coming on, and it's Manny and I have talked about this several times while doing the Secret Wars chronology as well, is that nowadays in comics, when they try to catch you up, there'll be a little paragraph, like an mm-hmm. inside cover, and it tells you, here's what's happened. Whereas the way they do it in these, and it's very much of its time, a lot of comics did this then, they're always a recap. They're always assuming that no matter what issue it is, there's always can be a new reader. So it's Mr. Fantastic or the Hulk or Captain America yeah. or Doctor Doom, whatever, thinking in their mind, oh, here's what's happened so far. And they basically just go through 3 or 4 or 5 panels of just total word dump exposition. And it's kind of like, oh, here we go again. So,
which I do appreciate. Even with like Marvel. Yeah. You said Marvel today does it in like a paragraph, but DC doesn't really do it at all, which no. even when I'm reading week to week, it makes it like, sometimes you're like, well, what was happening in one Batman comic versus the other?
Yep.
Or you're like, so I appreciate a recap.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Because even on titles, I mean, I read so many books now, even on titles that are come out every 2 weeks, it's like yeah. I start reading the new issue and I'm like, wait a second. Let me go back and flip through the last issue so I can remember what was going on.
At least Batman's marrying who now?
Yeah, exactly. At least the last few pages of an issue.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this, because Manny and I had talked about it when it happened, specifically issue 4, my favorite moment of all in Secret Wars. It's number 4 when the mountain range drops on top of the heroes.
Ooh.
What was your reaction to that?
That's a fun scene, especially like when you have this version of the Hulk, which you don't get to see very often.
Yeah.
Trying to reason out his two elements. And then I also find it fascinating that the storyline that, well, someone was talking about that. Lately they've been talking about a Secret Wars movie as lately as two yeah, days ago.
I heard that.
And that like, you could actually do it pretty low budget because you would almost no one takes off their helmets or stuff.
Yeah.
I also love that Rhodey is Iron Man the entire time, and it's never addressed. But they still are able to work together like the Avengers, assuming their identities, and they're able to blow through the mountain.
Yep.
Using is that where they borrow the web shooters and stuff as well? Yeah,
web shooters yeah. and any circuitry that Hawkeye has in his arrows, and then
yeah, so they lose all their tech except for
basically Captain Marvel and Human Torch like feed their energy through the little grips that. Reed Richard builds, and yeah, just boom.
And also, like, yeah, being a comic reader now in 2018, it's wild to see this version of Captain Marvel or...
Oh, yeah.
Or even, like, reading the Avengers issues that preluded up to this, reading, like, an all-female Avengers team and stuff. It's like, wow, they haven't done any of that since I've been reading comics since 2011, so...
Yeah, definitely. They didn't worry too much about... But, again, the audience was a lot different back then.
Yeah.
Definitely. Let me see. Other favorite moments for me up to this point. I love the Titania Spider-Man fight where she's just getting so frustrated. She can't even
like, yeah,
a hand.
She doesn't know who he is.
He just throws her through the wall and she's like, yeah.
Well, both those, her is a what's the other?
Volcana.
Okay. Those are two fascinating characters of someone from Colorado because they're just there because that piece of Colorado was taken up. And there's even a line where it's like, we were just two girls from Colorado and then this happened. And it's like, all right.
Yeah. And then when you think about it, so also the new Spider-Woman comes from Colorado and it's like, man, you don't usually hear about Denver being a hotbed of superhuman activity in the Marvel Universe.
No, but at the same time, like as a comic reader, I've noticed that if you're throwing anywhere in the middle of the country, you're throwing to Colorado.
Yeah.
Like Bruce Wayne skis in Colorado. Carnage USA is set in a small town in Colorado. Like even just this random rewrite of the Avengers is like, oh, this part takes place in Highlands Ranch. Colorado.
Yeah, even the vault is in Colorado.
We're all exactly. Like it's the middle of the country place for Marvel or DC to just throw to. Is like,
all right, so
here's middle America.
So the question is, what superpowers is Nick hiding? We'll have to All right, let's go ahead and dive into issue 10 here. Before I start talking about the specifics of the issue, let me go over the creative team. We have Jim Shooter writing. Mike Zeck is handling the pencils. John Beatty is doing the inks. And Christy Scheel on colors. So pretty much the same creative team we've had throughout the series. There was a few issues where the pencils were done by Bob Layton. So before we get into the issue itself, I'll just talk a little bit about the cover. And again, I've said this many times while covering the Secret War issues, iconic cover, just about every cover, just because, again, it's such an iconic series. It means so much. It's such a seminal work. And these covers by Mike Zeck, they're all incredible. And so, you know, I'd say issue 8 and issue 1 are probably the two most well-known. And in my mind, it's almost a toss-up between which two. And 8 seems like such a random number, right? You would think, well, issue 1, it has, you know, so many of the heroes on it. You would think that would be the iconic cover that everyone would remember from Secret Wars. And you'd be right. And I think the only reason that 8 even rivals it, it's Spider-Man in the black costume. And, you know, the first time most people were seeing it. So for that reason, it's the most expensive of the of any of the Secret Wars issues, and you know, even more than issue 1. And oftentimes you'll see the set sold for a reasonable price, 40, 50 bucks, but that's without 8. If you want 8 in there, it jumps up to about 150. So that's the reason, just because it's technically the first appearance of Venom, if you want to get, you know, super technical about it. That's the reason that 8 is rivals 1 as far as being a well-known cover. Other than that, you know, 4 with Hulk holding up the mountain is super iconic. 5 with the X-Men. I would say this one, 10, which has Doctor Doom. And it says, the dialogue on the cover says, "Against the Beyonder, to the death." And Doom is there in his new costume, which he fashions for himself. And his armor is literally disintegrating and falling off his body. He's beaten. He's bloody. But the fight is still in him, you can see. And again, just a really iconic cover. Incredible job by Zeck. And inks on that cover were actually done by Terry Austin. So it's one of my favorite covers. I think if I had to pick, I think 4 is my favorite just because it's the Hulk holding up the mountain range. And that's my favorite scene from the whole Secret War storyline. So I think that one edges this one out for me. But I think 10 is my second favorite cover of them all. So really, really cool. All right, let's get into the story itself. As we saw last issue, the heroes managed to break through Galactus's defenses and get to his planet-devouring machine and start wrecking it. But what they weren't able to do is prevent Galactus himself from fleeing, despite Reed Richards' warnings, because basically what will happen is the machine that Galactus builds helps him to absorb the energy from the planet. But if that machine is wrecked, what Galactus can do and what he does is he flees to his own homeworld, which is a giant ship millions of miles long, and he will consume his own ship. He will consume his own homeworld, and filled with that energy, that will then allow him to kind of absorb the energy from the planet directly and render it lifeless, and will also result in Galactus winning the Beyonder's contest. The reason he doesn't like to do it that way is it's not as efficient as using the planet-devouring machine that he built. But as I said, being that the heroes broke through, he chooses that direction. And so when issue 10 begins, we see that his homeworld is glowing. The heroes are very distraught. They're like, well, here we go. We're going to get eaten. And there's a really cool scene on the second page where the light from the energy that's pouring off of Galactus's homeworld ship as it's being devoured is shining on the heroes. And you can see their skeletons like through their bodies it's just a really cool scene. And then as Galactus begins to absorb all the energy from his homeworld and pull it inside himself, all of a sudden the energy is ripped away and the heroes are shocked. They're like, what's going on? And Captain America says, the energy, it's moving that way. And of course, where is it moving? Toward Doom Base. The heroes are not aware, but we are, that Doom basically cut up Claw's body, his body that was made of solidified sound, took those pieces of Claw's body and fashioned them into lenses to focus the energy. And as we see the energy head toward Doom Base and Captain Marvel turns to light, she can travel, you know, much faster than any other heroes. She arrives at Doom Base. We see Doom kind of on a platform, all the lenses above him. He's absorbing all the energy. So she starts to think that she better get back and tell Captain America and Mr. Fantastic what's happening. And as she thinks that, Professor X is there in her mind saying, stand fast. I'm linking your mind with Reed Richards so he can see what you're seeing. He's the best qualified to understand what's going on here. As Doom kind of rises from the table that he's on, he seems to have a hard time controlling all this power that he's absorbed from Galactus. In fact, the walls and reality itself begin to resemble Doom. And he talks about how he's got to control his thoughts because he easily can alter reality through his imagination. And he seems to regain control of himself and then realizes that his senses have expanded and he's, you know, omniscient, he's omnipotent. And even beyond that, even beyond having extra senses, he says he actually encompasses all that exists around him. And he has a sense of something he's never had before, which is empathy, which is an interesting to think, something to think about when you think about Doom. He's usually very arrogant, very self-centered, and certainly no room for worrying about what anybody else feels or wants or desires. So he comments on the ability to understand the villains that are locked up in the dungeon below and their deepest, darkest secrets, as well as sensing a spy in his midst, who is Captain Marvel. And all of a sudden, the scene shifts back to the heroes. Professor X is worried that his mind link was suddenly cut off from Captain Marvel, and the heroes decide they need to get over to Doom Base as soon as possible. Unfortunately, the transport ships they have were all wrecked in the battle with Galactus, but Magneto says, don't worry, everybody get on board, I got this. You know, kind of like, hold my beer, I got this. So once everyone's on the ship, he basically raises it up through his magnetic powers, and it flies, some would say faster than it did under its own power. So while they're heading over to Doom Base, interesting time for Captain America, Magneto, and Wolverine to have a little philosophical talk here, or maybe just a way for Shooter to put 1,000 word balloons on the page. So basically what they're talking about is Magneto feels underappreciated. He's like, look at what I can do, and Captain America probably would have preferred that I fail. It's, you know, it's Magneto with that chip on his shoulder, which, you know, in Shooter's defense is a very accurate way to portray Magneto, especially at this time when his backstory hadn't been fleshed out as much as it is nowadays. So Captain America kind of takes offense to that. He says, at ease. And Magneto says, why should I be at ease? Are you jealous of my awesome power? Or is it because I'm a mutant? So, you know, there he goes playing the mutant card. And that's when Wolverine steps in, because Captain America says, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with you being a mutant, but the fact that you have tried to kill me and my friends several times with your various evil schemes and world conquests, it's hard to forget that. But we agreed to put those aside, and so you're here. And, you know, I don't basically what Captain America is saying is he's willing to work with Magneto, but he doesn't trust him as much as he trusts the other X-Men. And Wolverine kind of takes offense at that. He's like, well, why do you – maybe you should have qualms about teaming up with us, right? Because the mutants are at war, and they always have been. You know, it's great for Captain America to have these ideals of being, you know, a champion of the American dream and fighting for liberty and justice and blah, 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 but only for his own kind, right? Only for humans. just regular old Americans. When it comes to fighting for mutants, you know, maybe it's a different story. And Wolverine talks about how God-fearing Americans hate mutants. And just like the Nazis went after the Jews, the mutants are being persecuted. And, you know, Xavier wants them to hide and help when they can and try to win over humanity's acceptance. Whereas Magneto has always gone the other way and said, I'm going to use any means necessary to achieve my ends, basically. So the ends justify the means. And maybe Magneto has the right idea. And Captain America's response to that is, well, nothing justifies terrorism or murder. And Wolverine's point and response to that is, well, he's kind of saying in a way, history is written by the victors, right? So basically the big army always is going to call the little army terrorist, you know, underdog, rebel, whatever label you want to put on them. And then Wolverine says, I used to have respect for you. And then the scene shifts. So again, what's interesting about this, I go back to the fact that if we look at Marvel continuity now, at this point in the mid-80s, Wolverine and Captain America would have known each other for 40 years-ish. Known each other relatively well. I think they already would have an understanding, but again, that's all retcon. So this makes for an interesting conversation for sure. Meanwhile, we see Doom at his base, and he basically doesn't need the monitors anymore at Doom base to see what's going on now that he has this omniscience. He has all the power of Galactus, and he notices that the Beyonder's portal is still open. And of course it is. He wants to observe and see what's going on. So he starts thinking about what he should do. Is the Beyonder capable of being defeated by Doom? Does Doom want to face the Beyonder? Does Doom want to win the contest by destroying the rest of the heroes who are dust motes to him now? So he says, you know what? Maybe the Beyonder is the only worthy foe for Doom. And so he decides that he is going to attack the Beyonder and try to defeat him. And earlier in the series, issue one, we saw Doom follow Galactus, leaving the initial little bubble ship they were on, and try to confront the Beyonder to seize power immediately. Galactus basically sensed that the Beyonder had the power to satiate Galactus's hunger, and Galactus wasn't going to go jump through any hoops. He wanted that power and his hunger satisfied. Then Doom saw an opportunity. He followed, and even though Galactus and Doom were swatted back like flies, the armor and the sensors within Doom's armor were able to analyze that energy, and now Doom has this incredible power from Galactus. He feels that he has a secret way, a sling, if you will, for David or Doom to defeat Goliath or the Beyonder. So he constructs himself a new set of armor, basically transforms the armor that he's wearing with the power that he's gained from Galactus with the sling in his breastplate right in the middle. And then he disappears. And right as he disappears, the heroes show up. Doom's not there. They check on the rest of the villains. They all seem to be okay. They find Captain Marvel, who, you know, Doom found spying on her, and she's basically been shifted into light form and can't transform back. She's a living hologram. So we'll put a pin in that for now. Captain America and Mr. Fantastic find Claw's head, the only part of Claw that wasn't sliced up and used to create an energy lens, which Mr. Fantastic realizes that's exactly what Doom did. And before anything else can happen, there's basically a giant planet quake. So during this huge battle between Doom and the Beyonder, it's not just affecting the planet or the kind of the galaxy or solar system or universe where this is all taking place. It's actually causing quakes in like the time-space continuum. So there's no way that this patchwork planet is going to be able to hold together. And as Doom and the Beyonder continue to fight, the tremors and the quakes get worse and worse. So Reed decides that he wants to try to rescue Galactus, who's kind of unconscious in space. because regardless of who wins, Doom or the Beyonder, having Galactus on their side to help fight may be the only way the heroes feel like they have a chance. But before he can even lock onto Galactus with a tractor beam, there's another giant quake. Some of the equipment falls on him. He's not in real good shape, says he can't catch his breath. And on the monitors, Colossus sees that the village that they had occupied, where the healer Zaji lives, is burning. There's a lot of injuries there. He sees Zaji herself is hurt, and he feels very badly about that because, you know, professes to love her. But she loves another in his eyes. And so he, ever being the noble Russian, Colossus says, "Hey, Human Torch, Zaji's hurt." And Torch's response is, "Man, I'm worried about Reed right now. I don't have time. I've got no time for a chippy now." And Colossus is furious, "Chippy, chippy." But before he can say anything else, another big shock. And basically the Doom base is falling down around their ears at this point. Meanwhile, the battle with Doom and the Beyonder there's so much energy pouring out of the rift, it threatens to blow out the sun that the Beyonder created like a candle. So we get a closer look, and for all his power that he absorbed from Galactus, Doom's in trouble. He's on the ropes. He just can't seem to get close enough. His energies have been blunted. His defense is crumbling. We see one of his legs get sliced off. You see he's driven back. An arm is severed. And as the scene shifts back to Doom base, Doom appears whole. None of those injuries are evident as an energy construct in front of all the heroes. And he says that he's about to defeat the Beyonder, you know, Doom. He's lying through his teeth, manipulating. He says, "I'm about to defeat the Beyonder. I invite you all." The Beyonder's on his knees. It's what's given me the lull to come and appear before you. "Anyone who takes my hand and gives me their power to make sure I am able to defeat the Beyonder, I will, you know, give them power beyond measure." So really what we know is that Doom's on this is his last desperate hope to try to defeat the Beyonder. And none of the heroes do anything. They look all shocked. Magneto, however, has a different idea. And he steps forward and starts to reach out for Doom, but then he hesitates. Maybe he's having second thoughts. Before we can even find out if Magneto would or would not have grasped Doom's hand, Hawkeye, Iron Man, and Wasp tackle him, and then Doom disappears. Magneto's not happy. "How dare you touch me, you know? Get your hands off me, you damn dirty human." And Hawkeye's just ready to string the guy up. Like, does this not convince everybody that he's a murderer, you know, that he's pawn slime, we should lock him up? And Captain America says, "That's enough, Hawkeye. We were all tempted for a second, but it looked to me like Magneto had already stopped himself before he took Doom's hand. So in my mind, he's innocent. He's done nothing wrong." So we see Doom basically disintegrating. He's thrown to the ground, missing an arm, missing a leg, on the verge of death. And the Beyonder gets close. He lifts him up. He extracts from Doom's mind the thoughts and the memories. He basically relives Doom's life. And we as the reader get to follow along. So if you're not familiar with Dr. Doom, here's a crash course in the history of Doom. Once the Beyonder knows about Doom's life and his tragedy of his mother and the scars on his face, then he takes it upon himself to dissect the body itself, but just half. So he keeps the other half intact so that he can compare the two sides. So in order to do that, he has to remove the armor. And the exposition that Shooter gives us says that a lesser being wouldn't be able to survive this procedure. But it's Doom, and he's not going to give up. He's not going to accept his mortality. And as the breastplate hovers near the Beyonder, Doom reaches out. And again, remember that the slingshot is in the breastplate. Next page, we see crack-a-boom. And again, the Doom base is done. It's fallen apart. There's no stopping it at this point from just collapsing. So the heroes all head outside except for Captain America. He takes it upon himself to go try to rescue the villains that are still in the dungeon. But unfortunately, with the way the structure has shifted, all the doors are jammed. But Wolverine shows up, says, need any help? He uses his claws to slice everyone free. And Wolverine and Captain America both have a newfound respect for each other, despite the fact that these are villains who've done terrible things. They're not about to let them die, locked up like dogs in cages. So they both agree to disagree, but agree that they are good people. They're both soldiers in a way. Wolverine remarks that, I'm an attacker and you're a defender, but we're both soldiers. So we see Doombase is done for, and the Hulk seems to believe that the whole planet is going to shake itself into gravel, and they're all going to die anyway. And before they can decide what to do, it's look up in the sky. There's a giant light, super bright, heading toward them. And something's forming inside it. And we see a giant Doom. I mean, he's got to be 500 feet tall or so in his new armor, clearly restored. So we don't know for sure what happened, but it seems like a safe bet that that sling that was in the breastplate got close enough for Doom to trigger it, and he was able to steal the power from the Beyonder. So the heroes are like, oh man, here we go again. Captain America's like, this is going to be the fight of our lives. Keep attacking on my command. Don't stop. Don't ever let up, no matter what. Get ready. And Doom says, hold on. Absorbing the Beyonder's vast energies caused my form to swell to enormous proportions, but I am what I wish to be now, as he shrinks back down to human size. And he says, first, know this. The Beyonder no longer exists, and Doom has been reborn. Thus, two evils come to an end. Interesting choice of words there. I don't know that I would say the Beyonder's evil. He hasn't shown himself to be exceptionally curious and maybe very cavalier and oblivious to other people's lives and feelings and well-being, but I don't know that he's necessarily evil. But anyway, Doom says there's no enemy left to fight as he removes his mask. We're only looking at him mainly from behind, kind of at an angle, so we have no idea what he actually looks like as he's wearing this new armor. But the issue ends right there, as Doom says, the war is over. And then we get the little dialogue box. Nonetheless, we strongly suggest that you read the next issue of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars on sale in 30 days. I mean, obviously, maybe the war's over, but the series is not. We got two issues to go. So that wraps up issue 10. Again, it's one of my favorite of the series. I love the cover. I love that Doom, you know, we get kind of the origin of Doom and a recap of his entire existence and life in the Marvel Universe. We see that for good or bad, he's a character that won't give up. He's tenacious and very, very curious to see where it goes from here, right? I mean, I know where it goes from here because I've read it before, but curious to see where it goes from here. I mean, obviously, with hindsight, we know that Doom, you know, still is a villain. But at this point, it looks like, hey, much like Lex Luthor currently over in the DC side of things, is Doom now a hero? Has he really been reborn and the evil of Doom is no more. Beyond that, it's just a great issue because there's so much action. And when there's not action, it's usually because Captain America and Wolverine are filling up the pages with word balloons, like I was mentioning with their whole philosophical debate. So at the time that this came out, that was a little more rare to see in comics. I mean, nowadays, everybody's got a political agenda, and you know, there's been so many comics that have kind of tried to tackle these kind of topics since then. But at this time, that was a pretty mature and adult thing to be talking about. I mean, it was always an underlying theme in the X-Men, but I don't know that it was ever quite so overt between two characters. And so, you know, at the time, it was something really interesting to talk about because, you know, nobody doubted Captain America's heroism or his his ability to want to fight for everybody, his desire to see all men as equal and everybody to have, you know, a good life and freedom and free will and all that kind of stuff, as long as you weren't imposing your will directly on another through harmful means, he was fighting for you. So for Wolverine to call him out of all people, it was food for thought. Maybe reading it now, going back and looking at it, it seems a little ham-fisted, seems a little clunky. But again, I think it's just based on where we are now as a society, as opposed to where we were then. But again, I think it's a great issue. Incredible art by Mike Zeck, especially the fight with Doom and the Beyonder, the panel where the sun's about to be blown out like a candle, the Doom being dissected. I mean, there's so much good here. It's really, really cool. You know, Captain Marvel, when she's shifted into the hologram form, she looks different than her regular shifted into light form. They were able to make a distinction there. So that's really cool. Seeing Claw's disembodied head is cool. The only complaint I have at all about the art is when Doom first appears and he's like giant size. Oh, I should also say the panel where you can see through the heroes through their skeleton is really, really cool also. But the one panel in this story I didn't like, and it's unfortunately a rather large one, is, as I said, when Doom first appears and he's giant-sized, he looks a little cartoony to me. You know, it's a full-page spread, and I know you've got to make him look gigantic, but I don't know. He just, for some reason, looks really cartoony to me in that there's not a lot of detail there. So anyway, that's my thoughts. What'd you think about issue 10, Nick?
Oh, man. I liked it a lot. My favorite line from the entire thing is when Wolverine tells Captain America that I used to have some respect for you. Even with modern day comics, I was shocked how much they literally reference being Jewish and stuff as a metaphor for being a mutant. More so, I would say they do that more so than they do in modern comics.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In this issue, obviously the movies play into it directly with Magneto's origin and stuff, but that was interesting. Really, really loved all the panels following Doom getting omniscient sight or whatever Galactus gives him. Not only this panel as you were talking about where he sees the walls as his face, which I loved, but like where he's seeing through everything. The ground is nothing. Everything is nothing. He's just seeing the world in a whole new way, which they've tried to describe multiple times in the comic, where it's even from Reed's perspective, and he's like, oh, I can't even understand such technology. And they draw it in a simple way that you can understand it, but it's fascinating. I don't know. It's obviously a great plot. I love Doom being dissected. Are quite the panels to look at as well. whatever he's doing with Claw, this is one of the reasons why comic books are great, is that you could never pull that off in the movies, that someone's just slicing Claw into pieces to use as a giant. But yeah, it's there. I've really enjoyed all of Secret Empire, Secret Wars so far. One of the many secrets. And this is actually probably one of my favorite issues to date.
All right. So two issues left. Let's get your predictions. Obviously, I can't make predictions. I know what happens, but what's your prediction? Now, for you listeners, so here's the deal, right? Like, I have, you know, multiple copies of all these issues, but I also have digital scans of the issues, and that's the way I'm sharing them with Nick so he can read along. So I have not shared. I'm like piecemealing it out to him. I don't want him to read ahead. So he has not, unless he's gone out and got them digitally himself or gone and tracked down the issues. He has not, as far as I know, read issues 11 or 12. I suppose it's possible he could have gone on Wikipedia and found out, but I trust Nick. I don't think he's done that. So we'll get an honest prediction here, and then we'll be able to see just how right he is. What do you think, Nick? What happens next?
Well, Doom is a classic Cartman from South Park, so I don't trust Doom at all, obviously.
I mean,
Doom's... What?
I do what I want.
Yeah, exactly. No matter when you think Cartman's being a good guy, he's always awful. Doom's that way. I know he's Iron Man right now in the current comics. Still, never trust the guy. Not seeing his face, that's obviously, he probably got fixed by Beyonder, or he's fixed himself or given some illusion to help them believe that he is on the good side of things. But I have to imagine the Beyonder is still out there and fine, and that he still has something to say about all of this. because otherwise it's too nice of a wrap up. I don't know. I mean, even there's lots of stuff going on still, including we know that Mr. Fantastic brought back Galactus, which I haven't seen pay off yet, obviously. So Galactus probably has an important role in it. But I'm thinking the Beyonder ain't as gone as Doom is saying he's gone either, and that he might do something.
You know, I almost think that for issue 12, that we should do like a live video reading of issue 12. Like we'll go like page by page. So we can record your reactions.
I'm okay with that.
The listeners won't just be listeners. You'll be viewers as well and could see as we turn the pages and be like, oh my God, what's happening now? I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Maybe that's a possibility. That'd be really cool. Or if not, you know, even if we don't do the video, at least, you know, read it and get our live reaction.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of commentary.
Yeah, it would be really cool. So. All right. Anything else you want to say about issue 10?
No. I mean, unfortunately, I missed my favorite moment by jumping on this too late, which is Spider-Man getting the black suit. It's like, for me as a comic fan, it's one of the most iconic scenes of possibly all time. Being so
that's
a big,
that's your favorite.
Ben was my favorite villain, too. So I don't know how much was planned out in advance or whatever, but just seeing that moment makes me so happy to see the beginning idea of the symbiote being so important later to so many other issues back in 2018.
So if you have to, let me put you on the spot. If you have to, you have 8 there in front of you. If you have to break it down to a specific panel, let me pull it up as well. A specific panel in issue 8, is it where he, you know, first holds it and it starts to spread up his hand? Is it the giant page where... I think it's a full page spread that Zek does where we see him in the whole costume for the first time. Like if you have to pick. Yeah.
Let me find it. So close.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up as well.
Nope. I think I just froze my iPad by going too far.
Bear with one us, second. Everybody. As
well. Okay, there we go. I love the shot of him being in the suit entirely for the first time. Be like, not bad, different, but not bad.
So the double page spread.
Yeah, the double spread. But it crawling up his arm is very creepy and indicative of what's coming in a way that I think no character is like Venom in that way. Where yeah. I don't know, Venom's always been a very personal character to me. And just seeing it just crawl up his arm gives me just imagery that obviously isn't even drawn on the page, but I have because of other experiences reading and watching Venom.
Yeah, what's
from the animated TV series to the movies and stuff
is when you go back and you look at when the black costume originally appeared in Amazing Spider-Man, it was 252. He only wore that costume from 252 to like 257. It's only like 6 issues before he realizes, this is something bad. And I guess there was Spectacular Spider-Man that he wore it in for a little while as well. And then, you know, he got a normal costume that looked like that but was not alive. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a lot longer. But, yeah, just recently I was going through some old Spider-Man comics. I was like, man, yeah, he returned to – it's kind of another iconic cover. 258, he returns to the red and blue costume. So really interesting. Everybody thinks about the fact that he was bonding with the symbiote and he was with it for so long. And it really wasn't that long. It was less than a year, like half a year, 6 months. So
actually it's crazy.
Yeah.
Think back on.
Yeah, exactly. You think back on it. And it seemed like so much longer. So yeah, I definitely could see that being a favorite moment for a lot of people. Definitely iconic.
I'm a big Spider-Man fan. So
there you go. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this issue of the Comic Source Podcast. Hope you all enjoyed it. We want to thank you for joining us as always. Don't forget, you can go and check out past episodes of the podcast at lrmonline.com. While you're there, be sure and check out be sure and check out all the other coverage there on TVs, movies, video games, all that kind of great pop culture goodness. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. All 3 places are great spots to know when we release new episodes, as well as follow along with our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.